Connie Willis here on Coast to Coast AM. Our featured guest tonight is Jerry Wills, a person that's otherworldly, I guess, as he has called himself. I just met him recently and looked into him. I've heard of him a couple different times along the way. And some people did like me. They thought his Wills was Willis. And they had said, are you related to Jerry Wills? And thinking it was Willis. And I don't know who this guy is, but I started coming across his name more and more. And got introduced to him and looked at his stuff and got to talk with him. And very interesting person. Certainly a lot to talk about. And I think you're going to enjoy him. One of the really more interesting things that I found out was that he was dropped in a house here about an hour away from me as a baby. And we're going to ask him about that story. But he's kind of known for being an international speaker now about, you know, his adventures along the way. And he's an adventurer and a healer and a teacher and kind of a jack of all trades, the way he can work with energy. And those are the things we'll discuss tonight and the different trips that he does. Ayahuasca, all sorts of really neat things. So I think you'll enjoy him, too. So Jerry Wills, first time ever. Welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Hello, Connie. Doing well. How are you?
And I forgot to mention to people that he's got this incredible voice for radio. I'm doing great. Welcome to the show. I guess the very first thing to ask is about your birth. It was very different than mine, I'm sure. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's a little sketchy, really. I can only tell what I've been told and what little bit that I know. There is, the story goes like this, and this is what I was told, is that I was left at an abandoned farmhouse in Kentucky. I don't know where, but I have a sense that it was probably somewhere, like you say, like an hour south of you, perhaps, somewhere, you know, out there in the forest. There are a lot of places like that. And this would be roughly in 1953. And from what I was told, the officials had been notified that this was going to happen.
Who are the officials?
The officials would be, I guess, folks at the military base there at Fort Knox.
Okay.
Well, apparently they got the timing wrong, because they showed up 12 hours late, and I was frostbitten over most of my body. And I was then taken, and I don't know how I was taken, but I was taken to Fort Knox Medical Center, to the hospital there. And that's where I remained until at some point I was handed off to an Army man who was married, and apparently his wife could not have children. And that's who my parents then became. And the only reason I know about some of these things that I'm telling you about is because it would be another, well, there were a lot of things that happened between between being handed off to them and let's go up forward to about 12 and a half years old. It was about 12 and a half years old. I had my first UFO sighting. This would be outside of Elizabethtown, Kentucky. We lived out on a farm about 18 miles away from town. And one evening, as I recall, it September, October, I was out stacking some wood. And there was this very, very large silvery object. It looked like a dirigible, really. It was so large. And it just came floating over the trees. It had obviously come up from, you know, from one of the hollows, because in Kentucky, as you well know, Connie, you have hills and hollows.
Mm-hmm.
And it had come up and was going across the tree line, went right across these massive power lines that went right through the property. And then it stopped. And as it stopped, I was mesmerized by this. Stopped stacking the wood, The sun had gone down, but it wasn't dark yet. It was dusk. And there was a full moon. And the full moon was coming up, and I could see the glint of light from the full moon on this craft. Well, the craft was, like I say, like a dirigible. It wasn't like a cigar shape. It was more thick in the middle and rounded on the ends, and quite large, with these large round spots on it that would just fade up in luminosity and then fade back down, and then the next one would fade up, and they were a pastel kind of color. That would have encompassed, as far as the thickness of this thing, if you were to say that this at arm's length was an inch thick, which is about right, then these round lights would have been about half of that. So it went from one end to the other, and then it went back the other direction, very slowly. I felt compelled to run over there. And while I was watching it, I noticed the tops of the pine trees were whipping back and forth like the wind was blowing, but there was no wind. So as I stood there watching it for at least 15, maybe 20 minutes, it's getting darker and darker, I decided I'm going to run over there and see what this is.
Oh, no, a Travis Walton move.
Well, now I know that. But at the time, you know, I was 12 and a half years old, and this thing was amazing. So I started moving that direction, and I felt that I needed to just stay where I was at. It was one of those unexplainable feelings. I wasn't afraid. I was very curious. And then a wind picked up, and it came from my left, which would have been, let me think. Well, I don't know what direction that would have been now. I'd have to really think about that. But it was coming from my left. This thing had come from my right and was approximately a quarter mile away. So the wind is picking up from my left, which is a usual thing. You know, the sun goes down, sometimes the breeze picks up. And this thing moved right against the wind, and it continued on, and then it dipped down as though it were going, following the curvature of the hill. We lived on top of this hill, a very large hill, by the way, but it followed the curvature, and then it was gone from sight. Well, I was enthused, and I didn't know what to do except just to stand there a while longer in case it came back, and it never did. It would be that next summer that more things would start to happen. And this is leading up to how I was told how I had been brought here. Because really, I don't have any way to validate that. I really can't say that that's an absolute. But to continue with the story, that next summer, I was approached by a man while I was down in the woods. He was wearing a one-piece, now what we would call a Lycra outfit, but back then there was no such thing known. And I was deep in the woods waiting for a friend of mine. And this fellow, I heard someone walking. I thought it was my friend. And instead, this man came around from a tree. He'd been walking for a while. I could hear him. And he showed up, and I was surprised, but I wasn't frightened. And he wanted to sit and talk with me for a while. Excuse me. So I was fine with that. It was very hot, very humid. I was in cutoffs and a T-shirt and some boots. And, you know what it's like in Kentucky in the summertime, Connie. It gets pretty hot and sweltery.
Very humid, right?
So he didn't look like he was perspiring at all. A very nice-looking fellow. And he knew my name, and he wanted to talk to me. And before you know it, before I realized it, there were no more words being spoken. It was all being done mentally, which was, you know, a very unusual thing, of course. And I didn't really, I was like in this altered space when I was talking to him, as I remember, have remembered many times back on that occasion. It was as though we were talking without saying a word. Eventually, he, and in a short amount of time, he said he had to go, but he wanted to know if it'd be all right if he came back. And of course, I agreed to that. So he told me the details of how I would know that he was coming back, and he'd be bringing friends with him. It wouldn't be in this particular place. It's too far from home. And over the course of the next, I don't know, that would be probably the next 4.5 years, let's say, I met up with this man and several others like him under rather unusual circumstances, because either it would be in the middle of the night, I would hear this beeping noise, this sound like Morse code, way too fast to figure out. I learned Morse code to try and figure it out, and it was just way too fast. But it was just beyond that perceptible range of hearing, just right, right at the edge of it. And I would know that I was to get up and go outside, and then I would know where to go somehow. And then I would go and meet up with these folks. There were a few occasions where it happened during the day. Where we lived was a rather remote area. There was a house nearby. It was probably a mile away. And the rest of it was farm with hay fields and pastures. And I would take off running either in the night or, you know, late afternoon when this would occur. And I would go back into one of the back fields, and that's where I would find them. And they arrived in a saucer-shaped craft that was usually just sitting there on the ground with some very short little stubby feet. And these people would already be there. And then I would have a short amount of time with them. It really wasn't a lengthy amount of time, probably 30 minutes, maybe 45 at the most. We would talk about things and just conversational things. That's how it was the first year or so. It got a little bit more.
Like what? Yeah, like what would you talk about?
Science, space, other worlds, this world. I mean, just such a variety of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and honestly, I don't really recall the detail that I must have at one time known quite well. But it eventually got to a point to where there were more interesting things that were happening. And by interesting, it occurred really one afternoon quite late in the day, not quite sundown, but getting close to it. You see, my stepfather was a rather brutal man, and he drank, and he was a very mean person when he wasn't drinking, and even worse when he did. And he and my mother were frequently getting into blows. She didn't hit back. She just took the beating. And there were times when I saw the injustice of this, and I just couldn't hold back, and I tried to intervene, and I'd get knocked backwards. And then he was going to come after me, so I took off running. And that's when I heard the beeping. So I took off running as fast as I could. Of course, he didn't follow me. He had polio, and one leg was shorter than the other, and he really had trouble walking, let alone running, and I was quite fast. And I met up with these folks back in the woods again, and they offered for me to come with them, that I was in a very harsh environment, and it wasn't what they had in mind. It wasn't supposed to be like this. And so, of course, I'm asking, well, what are you talking about? And they said, well, that really isn't your mother. You were adopted. And you're in a dangerous situation. And if you want to come with us, then we can take you somewhere else. We can actually take you where you came from. Well, I felt very intimidated by this and very unsure, because I'd never heard of such a thing. And I declined. And eventually, well, within a few minutes, I decided I need to get back to the house. I was worried for my mother. By the time I'd gotten back home, it was now dark. And I came in the house, and my stepfather was gone. And I asked her, was I adopted? And she said, what are you talking about? Of course you weren't adopted. You're my son. And she pulled out a birth certificate and showed it to me. And what do I know about birth certificates? You know, I'm not that old, and I never really was exposed to birth certificates. I mean, gosh, where we were living, you know, we didn't even have inside plumbing. So no, I didn't know about birth certificates. She showed it to me. I looked at it. It's like, oh, well, it says birth certificate with my name on it. So that must mean she's telling me something legitimate. Made me wonder about these other folks, what they had had to say. And so I told her what they had told me. And she got very, very perplexed at this and nervous. And the color drained from her face. And she says, I don't want you talking to those people anymore. You're my son, and they're not going to take you away from me. And that was that. Over the course of the next few years, of course, I did revisit with them about, I'm sure, a number of things that were vastly interesting at the time. And it was at that time, shortly after that, that I asked them about this adoption thing, and that's when they told me my story. And so I've held on to that. You know, when someone gets out of a UFO, it's been my experience, because I've seen this more than once now in all these years. But when someone gets out of something like this and tells you something, it doesn't mean you necessarily need to believe it, but you should pay attention, because what if there is truth there? It wouldn't be until many years later, decades, I was in my late 30s, early 40s, that I ran into a man in Tempe, Arizona, and I was telling this story. This was a very old fellow. He was dressed in an army uniform. It might have been Veterans Day. I don't remember. I don't know why he was dressed like that. But after I told the story, and everyone, you know, when you're at one of these places where you're doing a lecture, people come up and want to talk. And when everyone was finished, I walked outside to go have a cigarette. And this man was out there, and he approached me. And he said, I know people might not believe your story, son, but I know it's true. I said, how do you know that? He said, because I was one of those men that took you from that farmhouse.
Ooh, chills. Chills. Wow. Perfectly said there. This is Jerry Wills, and you're listening to Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here. More to come with Jerry's story. He's got a lot of good ones, so stay with us. You've heard the beginning of it, and now you're going to hear the rest when we come back here on Coast to Coast AM. It's Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. I'm one of the guest hosts on the weekend. Connie Willis here, very happy to be here. And we're talking with Jerry Wills, an adventurer, a healer, and a birth that is very different than most have ever described to me. And I would guess, as you say it, Jerry, you are otherworldly. So now you meet this guy, and he says that he's one of the people that has talked to you out in the woods from the ship, correct?
Well, no, he was one of the men who was there to retrieve me from that farmhouse.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was a very short conversation. And when he finished, he shook my hand and said that he wished me well. And it was nice to see that I'd grown into such a fine-looking man. And he said goodbye, and he walked away. He just walked away. I never knew his name. I was completely taken by surprise. And I still to this day have no idea who he was. He was quite old when I met him. all those years ago. I'm sure he's passed on by now. But it left quite an impression on me because, you know, I mean, you think back on things that happened when you were a teenager, and sometimes they're foggy and sometimes they're not. And remarkable things like this, you have a tendency that there's something inside every one of us that looks back on strange things and says, and you say to yourself, was that real? Do I remember this correctly? And over, there have been events that have reinforced the details like that. And, you know, there have been a lot of folks who have said, well, what kind of proof do you have? Prove it to me. I don't have any proof. And really, it isn't a matter of whether I want someone to believe what I'm saying. I'm really not making a big deal about it. It's just, this is what I know. And it's very likely that there are others out there who might have had the same type of event in their life, and perhaps it will stir their memories. And these things they've been asking themselves, was this real? It might give them a little nudge so that they know that there are others out there like themselves who are asking the same questions and wondering about the same things. And to me, it's very real.
Well, as you're growing up, if you're growing up in the middle of nowhere kind of thing, do you think that everybody else was kind of dealing with the same thing, or did you know that this was a little different?
Well, you mean as far as the same kind of thing, what do you mean by that?
Well, you're going into the woods and you're talking to some people, and, you know, do you feel at this point you're very different than other people, or do you feel like as you're growing up and you don't know any different that, you know, maybe everybody else does this too? Or did
you know
it was different?
I did talk with, you know, I had friends growing up, and I did ask questions, you know, strange questions at times like this. No one else had anything like this that they could talk about. It was totally a foreign and different thing. And, you know, the other unique aspect of me is that from an early age, I was very tall. And now I'm, you know, still very tall, of course, 6'9", and I was, you know, 6'6" in the eighth grade. So, you know,
wow.
I stood out. I was different than a lot of these people. The other thing that was different about me is that growing up, I had a photographic memory. I devoured books. And the books that I was most keenly interested in was anything to do with science, chemistry, physics. But when I was in the second grade, I had already read Einstein's General Theory of Relativity. It was a book. I'd read that twice when I was in the second grade. And so, you know, having this kind of a memory, no one else had that. And school was an absolute boring circumstance because, you know, like, for example, in high school, you know, you get your books assigned to you. And, you know, the classes that I would be taking, like everyone takes, you take English and math and so forth. In the eighth grade, I was doing second year college algebra. I was very good at Boolean functions and trigonometry and so forth in the eighth grade. By the time I got into first year of high school, I just couldn't do the math because they were so far behind what I already knew. And the books that I had for either history or science or literature, I would read them all within a few weeks. And because I had a photographic memory, I didn't need the books any longer. I just had everything memorized, so I would just take tests. Some things were very boring to me, like U.S. history, because I'd been reading so many different accounts of U.S. history, I found that there were some rather severe flaws in some of the accounts. And that got me in trouble because I'd start questioning things, and of course the teachers only knew what they had there in front of themselves to teach. Got in trouble with teachers over physics because they were they were trying to teach things that, you know, they tried to do their best, but sometimes they really missed the mark when it came to Newtonian laws. And so I got in trouble, you know, a few times, not bad trouble, but, you know, disagreements with teachers is usually not very well liked. But I felt that the acquisition of knowledge was, though I didn't use these terms then, and I do now, but I think the acquisition of knowledge is a sacred thing. The more you can know, the more that you want to know, and you should try to know. And they seem to be stuck in a rut where they only knew these things, and that's as far as they were willing to go with it. So to answer your question, and I have a bit of a long answer, but there have been a few people in my life that I've met that have had similar things happen. They have similar memories. But by and large, no, there haven't been that many. And quite honestly, you know, I don't really go out and do anything to promote myself as special. I don't see myself as special. I don't do things to bring any attention to this. It's actually, well, I'm a little bashful even talking about it because I don't have any way of proving this, but it's just something that I know.
Well, as a, you know, you're an adventurer, you're a speaker, of course, too, now talking about these kinds of things, and you are definitely this world traveler doing a lot of really cool exploring. But when did you notice as a healer where, you know, I would like to say more of this, like, you know how to manipulate energy. Tell me about that. How did you know about that? How did you learn about that? Was that as a child?
It was. Growing up on the farm, you know, living, well, 18 miles from town, when you're walking that distance, it's a rather lengthy journey. So I didn't make it to town maybe once or twice a year. Didn't have any shoes in the summer. Had to wear the shoes in the winter, of course. But living on the farm, I had, for as long as I can remember, the ability to see energy around things. I call it energy when I was younger, is just I see light around plants and people and animals. And sometimes things. And I think the very first inception of doing anything with healing was really quite by accident. I had to get up quite early in the morning and go down to the barn with my stepdad. I didn't have a choice. I didn't like it, but I did it because I didn't have a choice. And 4:30 in the morning, you're scooping out the oats, the corn, and some ground up mealy stuff. I don't know what it was. Putting it all into a bucket. And you go and give these to the cows while he's milking the cows by hand. And this particular morning, it was cold. I walked into the shed because it was separate from the barn. And I looked down because I had always seen mice running around, and I thought they were kind of fun. And this mouse had encountered a mouse trap. And, of course, the mouse trap was right against its little neck, and it was just lying there just still with a little spot of blood on its nose, and I felt horrified at this. I thought this was just awful.
Yeah.
And I reached down very gently, picked it up, pried open this heavy spring on this mouse trap, and put the mouse in my hand, threw the mouse trap down, and just felt sad for this mouse. Because I already knew that I could feel life in other things. It was just as common to me as breathing. Well, I held this mouse, and it was cold, still, and I just cupped my hands over it and started breathing on it. I thought, I suppose, you know, if I warm it up, maybe it'll be all right. I did this for just a couple of minutes because I had to really hurry up and get into the barn with this stuff. And after a couple of minutes of breathing, you know, with my hands cupped over this breathing in, you know, I felt something stirring in my hands, and I pulled my hand apart, and this mouse was just sitting in my hand. Not really sitting, but just lying there, but it was looking up at me, just shaking. And I thought, wow, it wasn't dead after all. And so I gave it a good talking to, and I told it that I was going to be dumping some feed down this hole over here, and I took it to the hole and showed it to it. And I knew at that moment that this mouse had babies. And I said, I'll feed you every morning. Stay away from the mouse traps. You don't have to come up here and do this. So the rest of the day, I went around looking for mouse traps, and I threw them all down in the holler. And the mice were very happy with it. And I encountered dogs that, you know, we had dogs and cats and cows and pigs and all these things. And sometimes they would be hurt. And so I would hold them and run my hands over the area until I could find where they were hurt. And then I would just leave my hand there, and my hand would get really hot. And then after a few minutes, they'd kind of squirm and want to be let go of. So I'd let go of them, and they'd go running off like nothing was wrong. So I thought that was a lot of fun. And, you know, it seemed to do something nice for the animals. It wasn't until one spring morning that this fellow from a neighboring farm had ridden this little Ford tractor over to our property. It was wet, and there was mud. He'd come across a muddy field. He stepped off of this thing, took a step back onto the hitch, and slipped. And when he did, he kind of came crashing down. And he's just, you know, trying to get up. He's going, oh, Lordy, my knee. And so I helped him over. We didn't have chairs outside. We they cut off pieces of tree. It was like stumps, you know, beside the house you would sit on. Sometimes there'd be like a couple of two-by-fours across there, so you'd have a more of a bench seat. Well, this guy was sitting on a stump, and I was sitting on the stump next to him. And he was really in a lot of pain. And so I thought, well, I do this for the animals. So I just put my hands over, put it on his knees, on his knee. It was his right knee. And I was sitting on his right side and closed my eyes and just took a breath. And all this heat just occurred instantly on this chilly morning. And within a couple minutes, he pulls away and he says, you know, what are you doing, boy? And I said, I'm just trying to help your knee feel better. Well, he bent his knee in and out, moved around a little bit. I said, how's it feeling? He says, well, it doesn't hurt anymore. Real, you know, kind of snarky. And he stood up, took a few steps, and he says, well, I'm Swanee. And that's all he said.
He said what?
It's just a colloquialism. Swanee. Oh. I don't know what that means, but that's
me
what he
either.
Said.
Okay.
And he said, There's something strange about you, boy. He says, you stay away from me. And he took off walking, walked on back home, I suppose. He's gone. Well, before you know it, there are people talking. And my mother told me that this was going on, and that I better never do that again. And from that point forward, I was chastised quite frequently for anything that I had to say that was out of the ordinary. Well, I didn't want to disappoint anyone or get in any trouble, so I just kept it to myself. But there were occasions once in a while, because I was playing basketball, and once in a while somebody turned an ankle or hurt a knee, and so I would act like I was going to massage it, because that's what we did for each other, sort of, you know, rub the ankle, rub the knee. And it would just instantly go back to being fine, and they go and continue playing basketball. But I kept a lot of this hidden and secreted away because it wasn't acceptable. And really, I didn't have a vocabulary. I didn't know how to talk about this. I felt very intimidated by the whole thing because, you know, here I am on one hand meeting up with people from God knows where down in the woods who are flying in on UFOs. And during this time, there are UFOs being seen all over the place. All through Kentucky, all through this area we lived in. And now here I am putting my hands on people and, you know, suddenly they're fine. So, you know, I quickly gained a reputation in some respects as being a real weirdo. And of course, when you are that age and you're looked at because, you know, you're very tall, you don't dress like the rest of the guys dress. They couldn't find clothes for me, so they had to go to the Army surplus store. So everybody else was wearing nice shoes. I had combat boots, and they were too small. So I was kind of an oddball. And, you know, I learned to be quiet about this. And, you know, I tried to bring it forward once in a while. After I turned 18, of course, the contact stopped. And I tried to stay quiet about this. But once in a while, somebody needed something, and I would try to help them. And then, of course, it all came back again. And it's like, you know, something strange about you. You know, it's either who do you think you are, God, or what's the matter with you? You know, how can you do stuff like that? You know, you're possessed. So, you know, I learned to be quiet. And that all came to a head, really, later in life. I was about, I don't know, 42, 43, something like that. And it was finally, I just couldn't not be myself.
And we're going to find out what yourself was when we come back. You're listening to Coast AM. Connie Willis here with Jerry Wills. Some more of what's going on with him and even a near-death experience, too. To see where he got into being able to work with this energy so much and teach you how to do it too. You're listening to Coast AM. Connie Willis here.